But what happened in that the game was literally from the moment the game started, there was a fist fight. It took 2 seconds before they started hitting each other. It is well known, and a simple online search will show you, that ice hockey is the greatest cause of sports injuries in Canada. And even more so in leagues which involve body checking. So what I'd like to discuss now are three issues. Issue number one, can a person play hockey at all? If they are subjecting themselves potentially to bodily injury, is it permissible to subject oneself to such a risk of injury? Question number two, in hockey, there is body checking, right? There are times in hockey, and it's totally legal, certainly in professional leagues, and even from what I understand, and anyone who plays hockey can inform me if I'm wrong, but even in high school leagues and the like, in boys' leagues, body checking, it is legal to throw your body into another player in order to get position and have a better chance of have a clear path to the goal. You can hit people in hockey. So is that allowed? Should you be allowed to check if that can clearly cause injury? I will note that the statistics say in ages 15 to 17, boys are 3 times more likely to get injured while playing ice hockey. And that might be because body checking is allowed in boys' leagues. And number three, and maybe this is the most interesting, it's not just that injuries are incidental, but there are times in hockey, and not just hockey, but all other sports as well, in basketball and football, where one team will send someone out specifically to injure someone on another team, right? To check them hard, or in basketball, it will be a hard foul, or certainly in football, to give the person a tackle, not just to stop them from running, but to show them that you mean it. Should that be allowed? Is that it? Can we say, well, that's sort of part of, you know, the competition, or no, you can't hit people. So, at first glance, the answer to these questions should all be absolutely not. Of course it's not allowed. You can't hit people. You can't injure people. That's wrong. It's against the Torah. And if you look in source number one, the Rambam seems to say this pretty explicitly. Says the Rambam, and again, just to note, this year is being dedicated by Nathan Kirsch in memory of his beloved parents, Lou and Ruth Kirsch, and his beloved brother, Jerry Kirsch, Zichronam Levracha. The Rambam here says, in source number one, this is in the Laws of Injuries and Damages, Asur la'adam lachbo beim ba'atmo beim b'chaviro. It is forbidden for a person to injure himself or another. V'lo acho v'atmo b'lvara kol ha'make adam kasher b'Yisrael. Not only if you injure someone, but even just hitting them and not injuring them, ben katon ben gadol, whether an adult or a minor, ben ish ben isha, whether a man or a woman, derech nitzayon, and we'll keep that in mind, please, in a combative way, hare ze over bilo tase, you violate a negative prohibition. Shenemar lo yosif l'hakoto, it says in Devarim that you shouldn't add lashes. In the Torah, we have a penalty for many prohibitions under certain circumstances of 39 lashes. And the Torah says you cannot add an additional lash. You can't hit someone an extra time. In fact, that's a prohibition. And says the Rambam, in Mishira Torah Shalola Hosef Ba'akat Chote, if the Torah warns us not to add to the lashing of a sinner, certainly all the more so it's prohibited to hit someone who is not a sinner for no reason. So at first glance, of course you can't check anyone, you can't even hit someone. In fact, in the next halacha, although I didn't bring it for you, the Rambam says, based on a story we have in the Torah about Moshe Rabbeinu, who sees two Jews hitting each other, that even if you simply raise your hand to hit someone, you are called a wicked person before you even hit them. So, of course you can't hit anyone. That should be our answer. I see someone has a comment about injuries during vocation. We'll get to that. Not only is this the case, but if you reply to me, well, look, like, we're not intending to injure anyone. Well, the Gemara in source number two says that even if you don't intend to injure another person, it's not only that you violate a prohibition, you have to pay them for it. This is the Gemara in source number 2. It's the Mishnah in Bava Kama, quoted in the Gemara on Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. Adam mu'ad le'olam. A person is always forewarned. Ben shogeg, ben mezid, ben ar, ben yashin. Whether they are awake, asleep, whether it is accidental or on purpose. A person blinds their friend or breaks their vessels, they pay full damages. And the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, how do we know that someone is liable even if they damage someone else accidentally? Amar Chizkiya v'kentan v'chizkiya, Amar Kra petzatachas potza, the Torah says in Mishpatim, you receive a wound instead of a wound. This makes one liable for accidental damages as if they were purposeful. And for unwillful acts as if they were willful. So not only is it true at first glance that you shouldn't be able to check anyone or push someone, it's also true that if you accidentally harm them in the process, you have to pay them for it, even if it was in the context of a game. That's what I would have thought at first. Adam Muad la'olam means you're always liable. However, before you start throwing away your hockey equipment, we do have many sources in halacha which seem to allow some leeway for what I would call horseplay. That when you're not actually hurting someone, it's not in the context of any sort of battle, but it's sort of, you know, as a joke, as a prank. We have sources in halacha which do allow certain activity of this nature. If you look in the source, the source for this that I think is most prominent is in the Gemara in Sukkah 45a, where the Mishnah says that on Hoshana Rabbah, miyad tinoko tshomten et lulaveyan v'ochen et rogeyan. Now, the way to translate this is kind of complicated, but I'll say it this way. The simple explanation of the Mishnah is that on Hoshana Rabbah, adults would snatch away the lulavim from children, and they would eat their etrogim. Now, although it seems kind of funny, however, certainly it's forbidden. You can't steal, it's stealing. And then not only are you stealing, you're destroying the property. How can such a thing be allowed? And indeed, Rashi on Sukkah interprets the Gemara this way. He says that the adults would snatch away the lulavim from the children. And he says, "Ein badavar lo mishum gezav lo mishum darkei shalom." And don't think it's a problem of theft or a problem of violating the peace. Why is it not a problem? Shekach nahagu machmat simcha, because that was their custom to perpetuate joy. It was part of the spirit of the day to make it a happy atmosphere to do these types of things. Now Tosfot on Sukkah elaborates on this and says, you know, it's not just, you know, this doesn't seem to be such a horrible thing. It's an innocuous prank. You take the lulav away. It's the last day of Sukkot anyway. But Tosfos says, and takes it a step further, says Tosfos, on source number 5, the Yesh Lomo Mikan Otana Bachurim Sharochlim Besusim. You can learn from here. Those young men who ride on horses, Likrat Chatan, if you think we had fun nowadays, they really had fun back in the day. It seems like there was a custom whereby before a wedding there would be a jousting match between the friends of the groom and the groom. They would get on horses and ride toward each other. And he says, "V'nochamim zemze." They fight with each other. V'korim bigdol shachaviro, and one friend will rip the clothes of another. O makakalo suso, or damage their horse. Shehein pitzurin. They're exempt. Shekach nahagu machmatzim chachatan. Because that's the custom. In order to make the chasan happy, there's a mitzvah, simcha chatan v'kala, to bring joy to the bride and groom. This is their way of bringing joy. It's lots of fun. I don't know if the Jewish mothers in the crowd would recommend jousting for fun, but that's what they did. And that's okay. It's okay because that's the custom. It's worth noting, Tosfos actually quotes a completely different understanding. V'odi shomar, maybe the Mishnah is not talking about actually snatching the lulav from the children. For those who learn Gemara or Mishnah, for that matter, you know that miyad can mean two things. Miyad can mean from the hand of. Miyad can also mean immediately, right away. So the other explanation of this Gemara in Sukkah is that not that the adults snatch the lulavim from the children, but rather that miyad, right away, shom tenet lulavim, the children threw down their own lulavim, the och and that drogan, that there wasn't any theft involved here. So there is another way to learn this Mishnah, which sort of make this source irrelevant. Nevertheless, the Rishonim took this Tosos and had a great time with it. So if you look at source number 6, this is the Aguda of Alexander Zuslin HaKohen, a well-known Ashkenazic halachic source, and he quotes Tosfos and says as follows, Kein pasakti lefamim b'shabbatot b'chatzer beit hakneset. I said the same thing in shul on Shabbat, that kishemesachem avachurim, when the young men play in the courtyard of the shul, umakin zedzeh, and they hit each other. And again, if you think things were wild, are wild nowadays outside shul, back in the days they had fist fights in the chatzar beis hakneses, in the sanctuary of this, in the courtyard rather, of the synagogue. And the Aguda says that when they hit each other and hurt each other, they are not liable because that's what they do. V'vad shelo yechavnu, he says, as long as they don't intend to cause any damage. And in fact, if you look at source 7, the Ramah, or Moshe Islis in the Shulchan Aruch on his glosses to the Code of Jewish Law, quotes this and codifies it for halacha practically that these actions do not require paying damages. Why? Hoel v'nahagu kein. Because that's the custom. Now, at first glance, this is absolutely preposterous. You can make a custom to violate Jewish law? Of course you can't. Why does it matter that they had the custom? If we made a custom that we were going to eat a cheeseburger for Simcha, would that be okay? It's crazy. So, in order to address the issue, we have this rush in source number 8. This is one of the primary sources in the Rishonim that discusses this type of combat, which is not meant in any mean or is in the context of playing and fun. And this was the question asked to the Rus. She'ela. Shnayim shenav abku yachav v'hippel echel chaver la'aretz. Two people were fighting, and one felled the other. V'nafel alav, u'v'nofel alav simeino shaltaton. So two people are wrestling. One throws the other to the ground and falls on top of them and blinds their eye. Blinds their eye. They can no longer see with one eye as a result of this wrestling match. The question is, should this person be liable? And the Rush says, and if you have a question, you can just jump in verbally. It's okay. The Rush says, no. Nirali depator mehedvarim. It seems to me that they are exempt from the five payments of damages. He says, "Va'afal God the kaima adamu ad la'olam." Even though we think adamu ad la'olam, a person's always forewarned. You have to pay for even accidental damages, even when you're sleeping. Hecha dehava ones gamor pater. When it is a completely uncontrollable event, you are exempt. Now, here it's worth giving a bit of background. There is an argument in the Rishonim as to the extent of when a person is liable for damages. For those who were learning with us on Fridays, we talked about this recently. There, one opinion is that of Tosfot and other Rishonim who say, even though we say a person is always liable for damage, always is a bit of a misnomer. There are certain extenuating circumstances, things that are outside your control, where you're not liable. Here the Rush quotes a number of examples, one of which is someone who was sleeping alone in their bed, someone else gets into bed with them, they are completely unaware of the other person's presence, they roll over and damage them. Says the Yerushalmi, you're exempt from damage in such a case because you didn't even think anyone was going to be next to you. How could we hold you liable? There are other examples. If someone's walking on a public road and they trample on someone's vessel, the Gemara says people don't always look so carefully when they're walking in the street. You're exempt. Another example, when someone is carrying a beam and someone in front of them suddenly stops. And because they stop, they get damaged by the beam. Again, you are not liable. So says the Rush, we have certain circumstances in halacha where if it's uncontrollable, then you are not liable for damages. That's the first thing the Rush says. And then he continues. V'chein b'nidon zeh, nit'apku ze'em zeh midat shneihem. They wrestled with each other with both of their consent. V'hiziku etzeh etzeh shelo b'kavana. They didn't mean to damage each other. Ki hadav v'yadua k'sheshneihem nit'apku ikar kavanatam she'apil echar l'chaveiro. When you wrestle, everybody knows. I guess the Rush must have had some personal experience with this. Everybody knows when you wrestle, you try to throw the other person to the ground. That's what you do. When you throw someone to the ground and fall on top of them, you can't try to be precise and make sure you don't damage them when you do it. You can't, okay, I'm gonna fall down slowly while we wrestle so you don't get hurt. Of course, that's crazy. That's not gonna work. Because you wrestle with all your might. Everybody tries to get their friend to the ground, even if they end up hurting them. And with this intention, they began wrestling together. Now, the Beit Yosef, I don't have it for you here, but the Beit Yosef is very bothered. The Rav Yosef Karo, author of Shulchan Aruch, is very bothered by this Rush. And he says, I don't get it. You're flip-flopping here. First, the Rush says that in extenuating circumstances, you are exempt from damages. Can you really call this an extenuating circumstance? Is this comparable to the person who's walking in the middle of the street and someone stops in front of them and they collide? No, it's not. You made a cognitive decision to wrestle with someone knowing that you might hurt them. So that's not extenuating. That's not uncontrollable. Don't wrestle. That's problem one. So then the Rush says, well, they had this in mind. And what it seems like he's saying is that, well, when you wrestle, you sort of pardon the other party. You say, the fact that you're wrestling means you're saying, I'm not going to be particular about the damages that are incidental to this act of wrestling. But the Beit Yosef says, well, that's a problem also, as we'll get to, because the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, you can't be mochel on, if someone says, you can damage me, and I pardon you for it, he's still liable. However, if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan in Source 9, he explains it as follows, and I think this is really what he means. What he's sort of saying is, look, when a person makes an active decision to involve themselves in wrestling, so at that point, they're saying, I know that in the process of wrestling, it's inevitable. It's almost impossible to stop me from damaging the other person or the other person from damaging me. In that sense, it's an onus gamor. There's no way you can control that once you are already wrestling. Yet they both together decided to wrestle. So given that they both signed up for this experience, it's understood that they pardon each other from damages. And that's what the Rush says. And this also is paskin halachically in the Shulchan Aruch that you, the two people that wrestle together are exempt from paying damages to each other. So at this point, if we're to stop here, it's great. Not only should you be able to play hockey, I would say that checking should also be okay, although you could start thinking about the following question. We could have to ask, when you sign up to play hockey, what are you signing yourself up for? Well, you might know that there will be body checking involved. But even if there is body checking involved, what if a person goes overboard? What if a person checks you excessively or too hard or illegally? Should that be liable? So that's an interesting question. Again, the Rush, part of the Rush's argument is that it's inevitable that it's going to happen, and you might say, well, maybe unnecessary roughness, let's say, in football. It's not inevitable. It happens, but it's not inevitable. But I can even maybe hear that even the enforcer problem, if you sign up for it, if it's part of the game, it's known people do this, it's known that when you're playing basketball, sometimes they'll hit you hard on your way to the basket. Maybe then you shouldn't be exempt. However, there are a few problems. Problem number one is sources number 10 and number 11, where even though the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch says that in the context of Purim, if someone damages someone because of the revelry and the happiness of Purim, they're exempt. The Mefarshim say it's only if they don't intend to do so. If you intentionally damage someone, you are always liable because no one allows someone to hurt them on purpose. So that would seem to already mitigate the possibility of, you know, the sending out the enforcer to specifically rough someone up in the context of a sporting event. But there's another big problem here. And this problem I heard from Rabbi Daniel Stein, Rosh Hashiva at Yeshiva University, who gave a shiur on the topic of contact sports. And that problem is as follows. Again, we started off with shiur, this shiur, with the Rambam, who says it's forbidden to damage others, and it's forbidden to damage yourself. Think about that. What is the basis for any of this activity? It's mechila. It's the fact that I sign myself up for this. And I know that when I wrestle or play football or play hockey or play basketball, that there will be some injury involved. Do I have the right to do that? I have the right to say it's okay for you to damage me? It's prohibited. It's a violation of Torah law. How do I have that right? If I can't hurt myself, how can I allow you to hurt me? If you look in the source in source number 12, the Gemara in Bava Kamma says in the Mishnah, and this is where the Rambam got it, Hachovel ba'atmo afal pisha ino rashai patur. If someone hurts themselves, even though they are not allowed to do so, they are exempt. They are exempt, but they're not allowed to do so. The truth is, it's an argument in the Talmud itself. However, we hold halachically that it is forbidden for one to injure themselves. And if you look at Source 13, the Be'er HaGola, or Mor Shavivkis, gives a beautiful explanation as to why this is so. He says, you don't have full jurisdiction over your own life or your body. We are sent here on a mission from Hashem to do his avoda, to do his service, to perform mitzvot, to accomplish in this world. Therefore, you don't have the right to compromise that mission by damaging yourself or risking your life unnecessarily. That's not your prerogative. Your body is also owned by God. And the Alter Rebbe, in source number 14, Paskins explicitly, it's forbidden to hurt one's friend, even if they give you permission to do so, because you don't have jurisdiction over your body to hit it, to embarrass it, or to pain it in any way. So the big question is, well, then how in the world is any of this relevant? Again, the question was, two people are wrestling, should they have to pay? And the question is, wait, why are they wrestling? Why are they allowed to wrestle? Forget about payment. Why are they allowed to wrestle to begin with? So for this, before you start throwing away your hockey equipment, again, we have a reason for leniency. If you look back at the first source, the Rambam included the words derech nitzayon. You can hold it there, Ezra. It's okay. The Rambam says it's forbidden to hurt your friend, and he adds the words derech nitzayon in a violent way. In a combative way. And a number of Mefarshim, Acharonim, and Rishonim say that in a combative way means that if it's not in a combative way, you don't violate this prohibition of striking or injuring another person. If you look at the source number 15, it's from the Maharal Bach. The Maharal Bach was a prominent Rishon in 15th century Spain. He was involved in the controversy of reviving rabbinic ordination. He was actually very opposed to the idea that we can revive full-fledged rabbinic ordination in the way that it existed in the times, in biblical times, and the times of the early Second Temple period. But he says, and therefore you shouldn't be able to adjudicate, you know, certain monetary cases and the like. But he says if a person goes to shul and goes in front of the court and for reasons of tshuva and penitence wants to receive lashes, you have the right to give them those lashes. It's my understanding that in some Sephardic shuls, they have the custom of getting lashes before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as a type of atonement. Says Maharal Bach, what about the fact that you can't hit your friend? He says, this is not part of that prohibition. Look at the last line there. He says, Hagam shlomatzati mefuras, zulati remez vavar. I only found a hint to this idea that you can give lashes to your friend. The Rambam writes that you violate this prohibition if you do it in a combative way. It sounds like you will only violate this prohibition if it's done in a combative way. And the Mincha Chinuch says the same thing in source number 16. Reb Moshe Feinstein, prominent posek in the 20th century, really was convinced by this idea. He quotes in a number of contexts, one of which is the idea of cosmetic surgery. How can one get cosmetic surgery if there's no real medical purpose for it? You are causing yourself an injury. Says Reb Moshe, if there is no risk, health risk involved, then this type of injuring to oneself is not derech nitzayon, and it is permitted. In that vein, so maybe we can again be more permissive. We can allow contact sports checking because as long as it's not combative, again, our clip at the beginning of this year seems pretty combative to me. I don't think we can allow actual fighting. But even as long as it's not combative, maybe it should be permissible. It's not derech nitzayon. I will note, just parenthetically, that when Reb Moshe was asked about playing sports itself, it sounds like he only allowed it in the context of earning a living. You're allowed to risk injury, or even worse, to oneself, if you are earning a parnasa out of it. So that's kind of interesting. He doesn't allow it explicitly outside of parnasa. However, there are other considerations. I don't think I'll have time to go into them in depth. If you look in source number 19 and 20, both the Trumas Hadeshem, Yisrael Israelin, and I believe it was the Chavos Yair, Yair Bakrak, both say as follows. Although we can say that in certain contexts, when it's either the context of a mitzvah, the context of a custom, hitting someone else is not a violation of this prohibition, we have to think about the global considerations. Do we want to perpetuate an environment of this type of horseplay? What type of effect will that have on the community? And if you look in source number 21, Rav Zilberstein, in the Chashuk Echemen rules that if in the context of allowing something, it will have a negative effect on the community, then it will never be allowed. You can't allow something that is contrary to Yeshiva Olam, world settlement. And so sort of to close then, we talked about the permissibility of potentially playing in contact sports. In certain contexts, number one, it sounds like people sign up for it and therefore it's not a problem. Number two, it's not derech nitzayon, it's not combative. But I'll leave you with the following question. If our opening video, which I guess if you didn't see completely, I could send you a link otherwise, but it's not hard to find. If we get into fisticuffs, if we're playing involved in activities which actually lead to real violence, what does that send to our community? Maybe we should think twice about the type of violent behavior we allow in the context of sports. So I'm going to have to leave it at that for now. Thank you very much for listening. And I'll now hand the mic to Rabbi Torchiner.